The Two Man Game Podcast is brought to you by Renaissance Insurance, Ryan Hicks.
What's up, guys? It's head coach of the Bears, Steve Smiley, and I'm honored to tell KFKA listeners all about my guy, Ryan Hicks, and Renaissance Insurance. Like basketball, there's plenty of players in the insurance game. So how do you choose the best one for you? For me, I look for character, passion, dedication, and like a star hooper, talent. Renaissance Insurance checks all the boxes and draws up the winning play every time. Let them find the perfect game plan for you. Call Ryan at 970-674-8825 or go to team-rig.com. Go Bears! Go Bears!
The Red Hot Bears.
The Red Hot Bears.
My goodness, Coach. On my show, I told Brock this. I said, you guys are going to win the next five games. This was after you lost to Northern Arizona.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
I said, you're going to win the next five games, and I'm not predicting anything beyond that. My powers only go so far.
Yeah.
And I said, you're going to win the next five games. You're going to set up for one heck of a game against Portland State.
Yeah.
And then what did you do?
Five went to six. You know, I become distracted. I'm sitting here. I'm staring at Hydra.
I think I'm corrupting our computer.
Well, I'll tell you, the amazing thing, on the side of the YouTube is Hydra's got all the songs. I saw a CU, I saw the DU, the CSU. It's amazing. What is Hydra?
I don't know.
I thought Hydra was in the Marvel.
I think it is, actually. I think it's those guys.
I gotta ask Matt. I think it's a Captain America thing or something. So Hydra.
At some point, we're going to have to get the makers of Hydra on the YouTube channel.
Be careful what you ask for.
Get them on the podcast.
You don't know.
Something dark, I'm sure.
It's terrifying. But anyways, five in a row, went to six in a row, and the Bears are rolling right now, playing well.
I kept saying it, and I sound like a broken record, but every time I'd watch you guys play, even in the 1-7 start, I just kept saying, no, that's not this team. You know, the whole Coach Green, you are what your record says you are. I get it, but I'm like, this is not a 1-7 type Big Sky team.
And all the coaching quotes, you could say, you're never as good as you say you are, as good as your record says you are, you're never as bad as well, and you're always somewhere in the middle. I do believe that, and I believe that scoreboard can be an imposter. It's always been harder, I think, when you're really winning to keep an edge, to stay the course. It's easier to coach a team in the sense they're excited. You can be a little bit harder on your team to make sure you maintain that edge. But when it flips like that, going back to it, I know we've talked about it, but now you're 1-7, and it happens so quick, so we had so many games in a short amount of time, that now it's how do you – again, show the face your team needs to see. How do you try to keep them positive and uplifted? And without we got to hold ourselves accountable, but how do you keep them positive and believing, right? I guess it's probably the word belief. But, the biggest game of the year was finding a way to win that home game against Idaho. We're 1-7. They're really good. I think this Idaho team's really good. And, you got to beat them. You got to find a way to beat them. And we did. And finally, we won a game. Okay, now, less than 48 hours left. We got to beat Eastern Washington. Now they're up to fourth. They're right ahead of us. Ewash is.
Yeah.
But found a way to win that one in a really kind of just gross, couldn't make a shot. But it was a good game. And then we went on the road, as we kind of, go backwards and went on the road. From that point on, I think we beat Weber State by 14. We beat Idaho State by 8. And then two double-digit wins in a row, Sac State and Portland State. Obviously, we're playing well right now. We just got to keep it going.
Yeah, you get that Idaho win. And, I like to simplify things sometimes. Oh, you just need to see the ball go through the hoop.
Yeah.
You just need to see that win.
Yeah.
Talk to me about what the feeling like, if we can go back to... Because when we talked about the Idaho win, at that point, it was 2-7. We're still trying to climb.
Oh, yeah.
We're still dead last.
Yeah,
you're talking about trying to finish the season, with the remaining schedule slightly above 500.
Yes.
What was that feeling like after the Idaho game? Did it feel like, even in that moment, the dam was breaking? You could get a sense of that. Or was it,
No, nothing like that. No, it was great. It's, losing, it should not be this way, but losing is demoralizing. Whereas winning's not ecstatic. Winning is more, to me at least, relief, because I think you walk into the game believing you're going to win every game. And then when you do, it's like, okay, good, all right, we can breathe a little bit. Now when the stakes get higher, when you're 1-7, and going back to that game, it was, to me at least, relief, and I was really proud of the guys that we played well against a good team, and we finished the game off, and then it's like, okay, now we got less than 48 hours to prepare for Eastern Washington, and first time we play them, so we got to figure that whole thing out. So, yeah, it shouldn't be that way, you know. And I talk about this a lot, that you got to really find a way to celebrate the wins. You know, now as we fast forward to that Portland State win, it's like, got to celebrate. I love those afternoon games, those Saturday afternoon games, because it's done at 4. I had the chance. It was a goofy day because, you know, my son, he did not go to our game, full disclosure. He went to the Border War to see his future team, the Pokes, play CSU in a great game. And so he's like, Dad, you're going to kill me if I'm like, nah, man, go see those guys. You know, and I took Madden to the first Border War in Laramie, and that was after another afternoon game for us. So we won. And so he and I drove up, had the father-son moments. And so we went up to the Border War about 3 weeks ago in Laramie in Wyoming, won. And then but he wanted to see the second one, and so he went out there, and so he wasn't there. And then my wife and daughter were in Kansas City at a club volleyball tournament. Like, this is like the crazy part of like people's lives. So my daughter's chasing around her club volleyball dreams, and my wife's out there. So I'm solo dolo. So it's like 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. I'm still going to cut the game, do what I do. It's mandatory for me or I can't sleep well. I don't sleep well anyways, but if I don't know what happened in the game and go through my first two or three phases of post-game breakdown, it just doesn't work. But with it being 4 o'clock, point being, Brady, as I digress, and this is like the real nitty-gritty behind the scenes, had one of our just beloved supporters, alums, donors. It was alumni weekend. But one of our huge supporters that never gets back to town, he lives in Chicago, he and his wife came in for alumni game. And so it's like, let's go to dinner. So we went to dinner with him and a couple of our other donors. And it was really fun. We went to the Rio. And in fact, we saw our guy Ryan Hicks and his wife there. Shout out, nice. Ryan Hicks. But we went to the Rio and just chopped it up and had a good time after the game. And there was no rush to get back. The only rush, I was like, I got to cut this off by about 7 because we fed the dogs at about 8 a.m. And then I told my son, which who knows if he did or not, like, you better let him out one more time because they usually get their dinner at about 4:30. So I was pushing it by 7, and I got these two crazy felon dogs, right? They've both been in the pound. And when they lose their minds, they completely lose their minds. And they're going to destroy the house. So I told our dinner guests that by about 7, I got to rip back home, shut the night down to feed the dogs. And then – but it was great, you know, finished that and got home, fed the dogs. The house was okay. Very perilous situation. Got them outside to go to the bathroom. And and then –
they're probably, you know, very thankful.
Oh, very – as am I, because, you know, they can do some stuff in the house if they don't get outside. And we don't have the doggy door. Like, we used to have the doggy door, but we don't have that. So you got to be there, be present. And then I was able to just cut the film and shut down the night, which was just great. You know, so I just – point being that you got to celebrate and enjoy – winning and where we're at, and obviously we're in such a much better place mentally right now. It's 7-7, and you know we're doing this on a Thursday, right? And so we don't play tonight, but 4 critical Big Sky games tonight. Can sit back a little bit as a fan and just see what happens. Something's going to happen.
Yeah,
4 teams are going to win. Some are going to lose. And
it's a tight race, man.
It's a tight race, and then you know there will be some movement tonight, and then obviously a critical game for us against Northern Arizona on Saturday.
I thought you were going to go with the Sean Payton kind of mode after he won a game 2 years ago when he was like, you know, they won. I think he still had Russell Wilson, and he's like, I just ended up, we had dinner plans, and I ended up just driving around the restaurant. I didn't go in yet because I'm thinking about, wow, we just won, and I'm not really enjoying this. To hear from your side of it, completely opposite, more of a positive, like, man, I got to reflect here, got the family all rock and roll and doing stuff,
right.
And I'm going to go sit down and enjoy this with special people involved with UNC.
But here's the deal, too. Part of that is the afternoon game. When we play Thursday night, 6 o'clock game, I don't have the opportunity to do that usually. So it's like, you know, game gets over, go do our media stuff after the game. If it's a home game, get to the house, you know, maybe 9 or something like that. And I'm cutting. So maybe I'm cutting the first part on the couch before my wife goes to bed, but I'm cutting, I'm recapping. And so usually on a Thursday night game or six o'clock game, this will happen Saturday night as well. On a 6 o'clock game, I'm not done breaking that bad boy down until, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. It's awful.
Yeah.
Having a 2 o'clock game is so – and on the road, too, is so much better. We played Idaho State at 4 o'clock on the road about a week ago, right? So finished the game. Great road win. We drove a bus to Salt Lake City from Pocatello. That's a 2-hour-plus drive. But we had the food ready for the guys and for the staff, so we all ate. And then as well, as we went down to Salt Lake City, you're cutting the film. So by the time we got to the hotel Saturday night, I had done most of what I wanted to do, and I could at least unwind, pull up some Netflix for about 45 minutes or an hour before I tried to shut it down and get some sleep with the early flight. So I love those afternoon games is what I'm getting to. And it's not always like that, but boy, it helps out on the back end.
Well, it's amazing. The schedule is crazy because, you know, it feels like a set schedule because you got Thursday, Saturday.
Yeah.
But those times
there's
can
variations.
Be – and that can throw off in a good or bad way the rest of the weekend, the rest of the week,
sure.
As far as your process of breaking down film and evaluating
sure.
the game.
Well, any of you go to this, you know, I know we're folks on NAU, but if you talk about like just this, you know, behind the scenes travel stuff, the last week and next weekend, it's 3 games in 5 days. So we fly into Spokane on a Wednesday. We play Eastern Washington on Thursday. We go to Moscow, Idaho on a Friday. We play Idaho at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Which again, I love that. It's a massive turn. It puts more pressure on the front end to prepare and like you know protect their guys' legs and things like that. But we're done at 1 o'clock. Could not get a flight out of Spokane that night, but still we'll be able to recap it, drive back down to Spokane, which is a good. It's a 2-hour drive, you know, give or take from Moscow to Spokane. So we'll at least get to Spokane by the airport Saturday night, be able to break the stuff down because then Sunday, fly back to Denver and back to Greeley. Because we play the Grizz on Monday.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those 3 and 5 days. It's brutal. And they're in the same situation as we are, so I'm not going to complain about it. The last time we had that, it was different. We had 3 and 5 days, but Montana State only had 2 and 3 days. That's not the situation this time. It's equal. We both have 3 games in 5 days, but it's a lot. And
yeah.
So being able to recap before you move on to the next one, it's critical.
Coach, kind of going back to this the Sac State win. Last time around, You guys are smoking them, and then they have this slow comeback, and it didn't even feel real until it was, and then suddenly we're in overtime, and Sac State gets the win. Being able to bounce back, and obviously in the midst of this run, but that had to be a mental hurdle too. It feels like there's a bunch of just these mental tests going on as you guys continue to climb up the standings.
We were up 18 with 9 minutes to go at Sacramento State, and it was an epic collapse, you know, and again, I always take the blame for that. Did we call a timeout at the right time? Did we put our guys, you know, but we lost. We were up 18 with 9 minutes to go and a couple of crazy turnovers that led to quick transition breaks and points and this and that. So when we were up, whatever, I think we were up 12 or 14 and a half this game and it was like the same game.
Yeah.
But as I kept telling us, hey, like, look, you know, foot on the gas. And do not, like, they don't care about the score. They're going to keep playing loose. And so we did a good job of finishing that game. I know everyone's so excited about the Portland State game, but had to get the Sac State game first. You got to win game number 5 in a row to get to game 6 in a row, right?
Yeah.
That was a good mental hurdle. And then to beat Portland State, which what's crazy about Sac State, they've been so good at home. They haven't won a road game.
Really? Okay. I didn't even know that.
All year.
Wow.
For sure in the Big Sac. But I think they're 0-14 on the road. And we didn't tell that to our guys, but I knew that. So you beat them, but then flip that to 2 nights later. Portland State was undefeated on the road in the Big Sky. They hadn't lost a Big Sky road game. That's impressive. That's why they're in first place. The only loss they had was at home to Montana. So no one's beat these guys when Portland State's on the road. So that was a critical game, and I was so proud of our guys. I thought our guys played so well. That was, again, it felt like a kind of like a Big Sky championship game. Like, I thought it was two teams that I think are heavyweights that played really good, and we were able to hold on to that one.
Do you just get that sense? I mean, I know there are 4 games still to go here in the regular season, but do you get the sense of, like, you're back to where you belong, you kind of thought you would be?
I think when you go 9-1 in the first 10 games, when you go 10-3, you know, you have the mentality, like, you know, you beat CU, you almost beat Texas Tech. You have the mentality, like, look, we're really good. That's never wavered. We just weren't winning games. And so now, like, I'm glad we're winning games. We got to stay humble. We're technically in 5th place right now. If it ended today, there would be some movement around tonight that we have no control over. Might be good, might not be, who knows. But at the end of the day, we have to get top 6. And if you don't, you don't, right? Like, you get what you get. You know, your seating is what it is. Like, if you get 7, 8, whatever it is. But the whole goal when we were 1-7 was say, okay, guys, I guess it was 1-6 probably. We got to become a winning program. We've talked about this. We got to become a winning program in these last 11 games. We got to get to 6-5. If we get to 6-5 in these 11 games, get to 7-11, we're probably floating around a 6th seed. It's, who knows? But we're in the mix. Well, we're 6-1 now, but we can't stop. Like, we are in the mix. We're exactly kind of what we thought would happen if we had this type of run. And you never predict, oh, we're going to win six in a row and we're going to sweep this, you know, Weber State, Idaho State. Like, you never predict that, but you believe it. But at the same point, we can't stop right now. We got to get this game Saturday night. We got, you know what I mean? And the beautiful thing about the Portland State thing, too, is beating those guys. And I think they'll probably win the championship, but they have four massive games left, too, or maybe five or whatever it is. They got to go to the Montanas. Like, they're not out of the woods. But with, let's just assume Portland State wins, we're the only team that's beat them outside of Montana. And so as you get to all these head-to-heads, like if we split, you know, teams, it's like, well, who wins a tiebreaker if you went head-to-head and you both won your head-to-head games? It goes against the best team in descending order. How did you do? So as of today, with Portland State being number one today, we're the only team outside Montana that's beat them. So if we get into head-to-head, what I'm saying is like with a Weber State and Eastern Washington and Idaho, all these teams were all floating around. If that is how it ended, we beat Portland State, and that would be a tiebreaker for us. Who knows, though? There's
It's a lot to go.
But it'll go quick.
And some important games tonight, too. So critical. Like you said, no Bears in action tonight. You guys will play Northern Arizona this weekend. So for you, are you able to just kind of like sit back? I know with you, you're going to be evaluating games a lot deeper than just like a casual watch of these games. But are there any games in particular that you're watching? Because all games on the schedule here are all pretty important.
Important as far as like, you know, if you could hit 4 for 4 games that help the Bears. I won't be watching them like the actual watching because I'll be at my son's senior night. But
oh, nice!
I'll be checking the ticker, the ESPN ticker, and watching the scores and refreshing. And I do that no matter what. It's just no matter who's playing, I'm out there checking out the ticker and friends in the. In the industry are always playing or whatever it is. So I'm always curious to root for our friends. But at the same point, it's there. You could sell a lot of different things different ways. But, hopefully we get the right hops, as they say, so that we can keep jumping up the standings when we don't even play. And then we play Saturday night. All we can control is what we can control. And we're playing an NAU team that beat us last time. And they're good, man. They've won 4 of the last 7 games. They were not playing well. Their record was not good. And now they've won 4 of their last 7 games, and I think they're playing really well. They could be Portland State too, so they're playing well.
Yeah, it'll be a battle for sure.
I think so. Yeah,
tonight's games though, you just look at like the spreads on these games.
Yeah, they're really
so
close,
tight.
Right? Like, what are they?
Montana State, Weber State, 7 o'clock tonight. Weber State is a -1.5 point favorite. Montana and Idaho State, Montana -2.5. And then Idaho, Portland State. Portland State's 3.5 favorite.
Yep.
And then Eastern Washington, Sac State. Eastern Washington's a 1.5 point favorite.
Yep.
So expecting all four of these games to be
this
pretty
be
tight.
Awesome. You know, this is like late season, late February basketball. It's just awesome, right? It all matters. And so it's just fun for people that follow stuff. It's really fun. And yeah, I mean, all those games, who knows? I mean, they could go a variety of ways. You never know who's healthy, who got hurt, who's sick, who's, you know, you just never know with this stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, when the ball tips up, you'll know, it should be 4 critical games.
Coach Quinn Danker, another Big Sky Conference Player of the Week award, 5. And we talked about this last week, like, what are his chances of being the Big Sky Conference Player of the Year? There's 2 other dudes that are really good that are right in front, maybe even the third that's pretty good, too. But now you mentioned it, like, we need to obviously climb up into the standings. At this point, things are starting. I mean, he had 16 assists against Sac State.
It was awesome.
Just insane.
Yeah.
Man.
You know, I mean, like with Quinn, it's like I said a couple weeks ago when you're sitting in 8th place, 10th place, like it doesn't – like you're not going to be the player of the year. That's just not going to happen. That's not how the coaches in the league, you know, vote for these things. However, we won 6 in a row. I mean, we got to keep winning now. But I don't know. I mean, we finished, you know, close to the top, and he's clearly had this phenomenal – impact on winning, which he has, you know, in terms of who knows if we win 8 in a row, 10 in a row, whatever it is, leads the league in assists, he's top 5 in scoring, all that, then maybe it changes. So it's trending in the right direction that he'll have a chance. And I don't think anyone else has had anywhere near 5 players of the week. So the visibility of him and, you know, the national mid-major player of the week thing that he got earlier on, like he's been phenomenal. So he would be well deserving of it. We got to keep winning for sure. And you know, I don't think he worries about it. I mean, sure, he hears a little bit of chatter because it's been in his, you know, on his timeline. He's the player of the week, and it's just such a great thing. But at the same point in time, like, we got to keep winning. So who knows how this thing shakes out. I mean, again, Portland State's in first place by a couple games, but they're home this weekend, but then they got to go to the Montanas. And that's a really hard trip for everybody, right? So, like, there's so many things that could still happen. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Quinn, it's hard enough to get to first team all league, which I think they take – seven, top seven or first team, next six or second team, next five or honorable mention, I think. So, yeah, I mean, I would assume. But, yeah, like, again, you can't control, like, who votes. And it's like we go back to your, you know, Dalton led the league in scoring. Obviously, he's in basically a lottery pick. He didn't get first team. And that was – I thought that was criminal.
That was tough, yeah.
But we did have – we finished seventh or eighth or whatever it was. And I love – I was thinking about that the other day. I'd love to go back and look at who was on first team, because I think it was Dylan Jones, who's also an NBA player, Cedric Coward, who might be the NBA Rookie of the Year this year. I think it was – Jabril Bello or Great Osabor, and Great, you know, Great was the number one sought out portal guy in the country a year or two ago when he went to Washington. Was there was some point? I mean, there's so many good players that it was criminal, in my opinion, that he wasn't first team. But it's like, look at the list too for those. Like, I think it was like Dylan Jones, Cedric Coward, Osabor or Bello, like, phenomenal players. Like, yeah, our league has had real talent,
oh, some
flow,
great players,
and people don't understand that. But then you start looking back at, you know, revisionist history, saying, whoa, good players here, you know?
Where in your mind, and again, we still have the rest of the regular season to go, we have the tournament to go, but I like this because I've had fun following you from start to finish with your career here at UNC. And every year you've had at least one pretty big, pretty significant dog. You've had some great players.
Sure.
Where does Quinn kind of rank? Do you think about that stuff ever? Because Quinn is becoming quickly like a transfer player who didn't start last year because of Jaron Riley. He's got to be moving up that totem pole.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, you look at it. I mean, you know, you go back, we're talking, you know, because it's funny, you know, agents are reaching out as it's like, hey, what are your needs? Like in a portal, not just people trying to poach our players, but also people that are reaching out saying, okay, it's almost portal season at the end of the year. And what do you anticipate coming back? And what do you need? And obviously for us, I mean, Quinn graduating, Zach graduating, Brock graduating, Humor graduating. We believe Ibu's graduating. We believe he'll go to Japan and get drafted. So it's like we got a lot of needs, right?
Yeah.
Even if we're lucky to hold on to all of our guys, which we're going to try like crazy to do, but you never know, right? But it's like so one thing that we send, we have this graphic, and it's really cool. We have a million graphics, right? You got to promote the program. But the portal graphic, and it's just portal players. So it would be like Dalen Kuntz. It would be Jaron Riley. It would be St. Thomas. It would be Isaiah Hawthorne, I think, are on that graphic. And just four phenomenal stories. Obviously, Quinn's the same story. Now, Quinn, a little different than he had great production when he came in from Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Not like this, but like it was great production. So, no, but as he's moved up the, you know, where would he rank? I would be dumb to rank everything out, but like there's no doubt he's right there in the mix of everybody else. And then it factors in, you know, obviously the Langstons and the Daltons that were not portal guys, but Brock Wisneys. And there's a million guys that have kind of moved through the ranks. And so I'm going to screw things up by missing names. Matt Johnson's, Bodie Humes, right? But as you know, and then guys that played for Coach Leonard that I was grateful enough to be the assistant for, the JDs and Jones and those guys. But when you Andre Spites, like there's just so many guys.
Oh, yeah.
But
every year there's maybe even two guys.
And
to
it
be
just
fair.
Goes back to two, like you know, it's not just the Jimmys and Joes, but like you have to have good players, really good players. They gotta buy in, which is the hardest thing in this new transformational world that there are new teams every year. You gotta have players that really get over themselves, which is kind of our mantra. Dive into the team, be about the team. And then kind of go from there. But, yeah, I mean, having good players, oh, man. And Quinn is right there with anybody at this point.
I like that you said that, too, like the whole get over ourselves kind of mantra.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of like Brock Wisney in a nutshell, too?
It's everything about
like
Brock Wisney.
It's like everything he talks about.
It's everything he talks about. And when you have it coming from starting with Brock, Quinn, and Zach, right, like senior leaders, Zach and Brock have been here combined 9 years.
Yeah.
9 years. So, like, those guys, their desperation to win has always been there. And then you get down to the final stretch, like, they're just so locked in. So it's like when it starts with those guys, you're going to have good leadership, good culture, all that. Well, what's culture? I mean, it's probably what it looks like when you walk in the gym every day. It's probably what it is. You walk in a meeting or locker room, whatever it is. But our thing on the back of our notebooks, the big picture is OOS, over ourselves. And it's ends with this, you know, Greg Popovich quote, which I love Pop. And talks about like just people being able to get over themselves. And it's not about you. It's just not. But that's really hard to do in this new world, right?
Yeah.
The new teams, and if you're lucky, half your guys are back, half are new. And so can you reteach these lessons every year? And will they drink the Kool-Aid?
Well, and this is what I – just with you and your coaching staff, man, because 4 or 5 weeks ago I asked you, I said, there's this players meeting going on. Yeah. You know, what do you think about that?
It's great.
And sometimes when you see that stuff, pro level, college level, you see player only meeting. Oh, that's going to be like a bashing of the situation. Yeah. Sometimes. It just depends. But if you have – you talk about the culture. The guys that you have selected, whether that's recruiting these guys out of high school or transferring over here,
sure.
You trust them to be able to handle that kind of business and not create some kind of a dramatic effect on this team. And that, yeah. And I've seen you in front of your team leaders, and I've seen those guys behind your back and talk so highly of you and this coaching staff. That's what I think of when I think of culture.
Well, we talk about, like, I really believe this. I don't know where we stole this from, but maybe we created this one. But because we steal a lot of stuff, right? But the idea of inflection points. I believe in every season there's going to be two or three just inflection points. Could be good, usually is bad. Last couple in a row. You're not – this level in the Big Sky, like, look at the – like, we have the most wins of anybody. Us and Portland State have 17 wins. There's only, like, four teams with a winning record.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's a bunch of good teams.
Yeah.
But because of what we all have to go through in the non-con, you're not going to have eight teams. This is not the Big 12 where the 11th place team has won 18 games, right? On this end of the spectrum, you're going to have a bunch of struggles and losing and money games early in the season. So everyone in this world at this level is going to go through struggles. And I believe there's these inflection points, usually in bad times, sometimes in good times too, but where you got to draw a line. So it's – to me, I look at it like with great teams, that's where you have player-only meetings. On the bad teams, there are no player-only meetings.
Yeah.
Those teams just shut it down. They just shut it down.
They get to a point where they're 1-7 and they're like, yeah, we're thinking of what the future looks like.
We have – so like two more examples. So Coach Leonard was the greatest at this. He'd meet the guys and we'd sit there, you know, before and get to like January. Get to middle January, get to late, and he'd just be like, hey, just remember, guys, no matter how it was going. And usually it was going pretty good because he won a ton of games. But just remember, guys, every day in college basketball, right now this time of year, one or two or three teams – they're quitting.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, a couple more teams quit. It's just too hard. It's too long. 6 months. We've lost too much. I'm not playing as much as I thought. Well, now it's like, well, I'm not getting paid as much. You know what I mean? Like, so just stay the course. Stay the course. Stay the course. Because teams are quitting. And I've believed in what Coach Center talked about. It's so true. And then we had a couple alums up. They were in town a couple days ago. And great dudes. And they talked about they came to our practice. It was a quick practice, and they watched our guys. And afterwards, I introduced the guys and say, hey, you want to talk to the guys? They're like, you know what? And they're doing this like this new kind of company where it's about kind of mental health and performance, but like just playing with joy, playing free. And so it's on a big picture. But it also talked about too is like, you know, guys, like, look, man, some teams we were on this time of year, our teams were checked out. Now, they weren't winning the way we were winning, but it didn't matter. Like, our teams just checked out. It was misery to come to practice. You got to understand, I just typed up practice number 109, official practice 109. That doesn't include summer workouts, full practice for the foreign trip, and fall workouts. We're pushing 150. So, so many teams, and that's what it is for everybody. Like, it just gets to be too much. But, man, when you got those guys leading, the fact that they called the play, how great is that? The people ask, oh, players only mean perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we want to be player-led. If we're player-led, that's what a player-led team does. And so I thought it was great.
Yeah, well, and when you talk to the players, well, I've only talked to Brock about it really, but when he mentioned it, it was, hey, I don't even want you to tweet anything out because it's such a it's a casual thing. But it's more of an opportunity as like guys that have bonded to just air out their frustrations, whether it's with themselves or with each other and how they're doing things, but it was never like a call out thing like,
no.
Hey, if you do this, we'll win. It was none of that stuff. If anything, it was just a confidence builder. And I think that speaks so highly to the guys that you're bringing into this program that you can trust them to do those kind of things.
They're great guys. And that's why even when we were losing, it never really changed the feel of like a practice. Like, hey, man, we just got to stay the course. Now, we were all frustrated. I was in a dark place, man.
Yeah.
But hey, because we put so much into this and it shouldn't be about winning, losing, but this time of year, right? Like, we're all competitors. We're all trying to win. We're so close, right? We're losing at the buzzer. But no, like, the day-to-day practice, those guys showed up, and they showed up, and they showed up, and they showed up. And the idea of, like, just you got to go back to the, why are you hooping? What got you into hooping? What is your why? And then you get back to when you're a little kid and a little ball, and you know, like a little Nerf hoop dunking on my dad on you know, knee basketball on the carpet in the house. You've had those moments. Or it's like I'm in the driveway just by myself, 1-0 on Michael Jordan, hitting the game winner, mm-hmm. right? We've all done that. It's like that's – get back to that. And they've always been like that. But, like, play with joy, like, because it can get so pressure-filled, so negative. And then, like, I'm just telling you, too – like these guys that really are like the most productive guys, when it doesn't go right in terms of losing, they don't play well, they get crushed mostly by the degenerates and the gamblers online. Mm. The social media stuff is awful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's – so like you got to understand that too. It's like those guys, it's hard to have joy when you're getting all these people saying how bad you are. How you, and it's just these people can hide behind this social media veil. So it's like – and there's only so much we can do. We talk about it and try to protect them. But like, you know, it's just – people have no recourse on that stuff, you know, and not good human beings, bad human beings. But, yeah, so like just to stay the course, and that's what's so great about these guys.
It's crazy to me that people tweet – even if they tweet not – they're not – it's not a direct message, but it's just a tweet of like, oh, so-and-so yeah. missed a free throw, cost me this much. But – and that's bizarre. But the fact that they're messaging these guys.
Yeah, the DMs. The DM, right?
And getting after them.
Yeah.
Like what – who – that is a crazy thing.
It's crazy.
To me.
Well, like even like you know, we had in our stretch, we had some people you know, even like on our you know graphic of us losing this game, like, people saying crazy stuff. You know,
oh
like,
yeah,
a couple of guys were like alums here. I was like, dude, and they're like, you know, some of those guys again. This is like the 1%, but like then they sign up for alumni game. It's like, well, hold on, now,
yeah,
man.
No,
like
yeah.
what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. Like, are you riding with us or not? Like so, but no, man. Like we went through the stretch to the people that matter, you know. People reach out and check on you and just, hey, man, we're behind you. Like none of, like the people that actually matter, those people have been in our guys' ear in a positive way to stay the course. And it's been fun this stretch. And we hope we're not done yet. We want to keep this thing moving. But, like, man, it's been fun. And to see guys pull ourselves out of the ashes as a team, what a cool thing it's been. And we got to keep it going, but it's been fun.
I love it. It's so much fun. These podcasts are so much fun, Coach. Did you happen to see last one, and I know you got to go.
Oh, you good? Yeah.
Did you happen to see UCLA head coach Mick Cronin? Did you see his thing with the reporter the other day?
Two
days ago?
And that, yeah, he ejected his own player.
He ejected his own player, and then he had – because it was the guy –
the student section.
There was the guy that was going to go to Michigan State, but then he committed to Michigan State, but then he instead went to UCLA.
Right.
And so the student section was chanting his name during the free throws. So the reporter asks him – I don't know if you saw that.
It's not quick. I mean it was viral.
The reporter asked him a question like, hey, what did you think of the student section? And I get it, whether you hate the question or not, but he just went
it was bad.
Off.
Yeah.
And then another reporter's trying to ask a question. He goes back to it like, why would you ask me that question? That's the dumbest question I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You win the award for dumbest question. And then the guy's like doing a nervous laughter thing, which I'm sure I've done around
oh,
you
yeah.
a few times.
Sure.
Coach looks up and says, are you raising your voice at me? So I was talking about this yesterday.
Yeah.
I went on a rant. And I'm like, dude, I'm just so thankful to be able to have conversations with these, with you, with great coaches in this area, and not get my head bitten off. But I wanted to get your take on that.
You know, again, I think, and I don't know Coach Cronin at all, and he's, he's obviously wildly successful in this
year.
But like, yeah, I mean, it's just a different way to do it, I guess. But like, yeah, it's just, I saw that it was strange. I mean, who knows if it's just the frustrations and the pressures and the losing and I don't know. But I think it's more so like that gets hit on social media viral, right?
Yeah.
But what you never see, and then maybe you do, but like is the pod, like you said, like the pod, like the people that. I saw some tweet. It was, I'm processing this one because it was kind of a pushback on that. Like, yeah, that's bad. But then, who was the coach that answered every question?
Oh,
and then it was like stayed on for another 20 minutes to answer all of our questions. And I'd love to shout that coach out.
I think I know what you're talking about. I can't think
I
of that coach either.
But again, it's just like most of the time, it's just like the perception of news and now social media. It's like most of the time, the negativity is going to get in it.
It
by
does,
all means.
Yeah.
But like the positivity too. It's so I hope we you know can drink from the glass half full and the positive side of things. But I appreciate that. Yeah, there's so many great coaches out here that are positive.
Well, that's what I for me. You know, I know we do this setting. You and I've talked a lot. I've been to a few press conferences, but I don't remember going to a press conference whether it's here or CSU or CU.
Sure.
Where the coach just absolutely lost his mind on a reporter. Now, Steve Adazio for CSU football, there was once.
Did he? Yeah.
And that was not to me. That was to our friend Kevin at the Fort okay. Colorado.
Yeah.
But it just – it makes me take a step back and go – when I get you guys on for interview, now Larry Eustachy was interesting a few times on my show, but he threw me for a loop a few times, but never disrespectful. And okay. I really there again. There are reporters out there that ask stupid questions that sometimes ask offensive questions too. Yeah. So I just always appreciate how you handle your business too. And that one kind of was a good reflecting point on that.
Yeah, that one was wild. And you know, you see a lot of these coaches just with their frustration too, and maybe not at reporters, but just at their season. And
yeah, and it builds up.
You know, Coach Boyle had one the other day. He was really frustrated after the loss. I can't remember where it was.
It was a pretty bad game. Texas Tech, I believe.
That's right. You know, and you see more and more people just getting really frustrated. But I tell you, people on the outside got like – this is those guys. I'm not making the millions that a lot of those guys make, but so he goes, well, they're making all this money, and there's no doubt about it. But it doesn't change that how competitive everyone is, and when things go off the rails, sometimes they go off the rails, and then you get into a presser,
and you're already teed up. Yeah.
It doesn't excuse it, but it's just like the human nature. This stuff does get hard, and so I can at least when coaches kind of get out there and just are spewing and frustrated. Like, I do at least understand like the emotions of, man, this is a hard thing.
Plus, you're doing it every other night. You know, you're in front of a reporter every single.
I talked about the football side of things that I really never want to be a football coach in the sense of like when you lose, you got a whole week to stew on it. That's not my personality. Like, I would not handle that. I would struggle.
Yeah.
If I had a whole week, you know. What I love about basketball is you get to play a couple days later. But then I told our guys before the game, just, you know, when we played Sac State, is that my last BP2, you got BP1 at the first kind of little talk we do, then BP2 is a big picture two, you know, BP2. was just the word grateful. And I'm like, man, I'm just really grateful. And I was like, and I kind of told them that just the thing again, like, you know, I never want to be a football coach. But here's why I love the basketball thing is we went to Sac State. We're up 18 with 9 minutes to go. We lose. Well, if you're a football coach, you got to stew on that for a year. Yeah. We get a chance to rectify the situation to play these guys again. I'm grateful for that, you know. And I think it's just one of the things that, you know, yeah, when you're playing so often, at least you get it, you kind of get rid of it or move on or this or that. You got to refocus. But at the same point in time, from like the emotional standpoint, woo, sometimes it can get hard. And, you know, we all fail, man. Like, you know, I fail much more than people realize in terms of keep my emotions in check. But like, we all fail sometimes, and that's the human nature side of things. But you at least when these coaches are out there, man, these guys, it is freaking, you put so much into it, you sacrifice so much. It's like, well, you know, these guys are making millions of dollars, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that doesn't change the gut core of like we're trying to win and we fell short and it's hard.
Yeah, because it all comes crumbling down if you don't win. You know,
yeah.
Your jobs are on the line every single game.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, on the small picture, like we're competitors, we want to win. But then, like, as it gets to it, I mean, you're seeing, you know, Jerome Tang, and then you see, you know, San Diego coach, and you see UMKC coach, and we still got weeks left in the basketball. And coaches are getting fired. This is Division I basketball. There's some pressure to this for sure.
A lot of pressure,
yeah,
man.
For sure.
Maybe sometime we can get into some of that more too as we go. Coach, always appreciate you, man.
Yeah.
6 in a row, 7-7 in the Big Sky Conference right now.
Hey, and for those that are listening, Saturday night's NAU 6 p.m. It is senior night. We're putting all that stuff on social, and it's like, well, it's not our last home game, but it's our second to last home game, and it's a Saturday game where a lot of these families are coming in. So, like, even Ibu, some of his family from Japan, Will Humer, some of his family from Sweden, and then obviously you got – so those two, and you got Danker, his family from California, Zach, his family from Kansas, and Brock being local. But we decided to do it this game because we're in town. We could have done it the last Monday, but it's like the families
– Monday night. Here,
well, yeah, the families would have got to Greeley Sunday before we get back from the Idaho trip. So it's like, do it where they can – be around and go get a meal and hang out for a couple days. So just so people know, this is senior night. We'd love to have a great crowd to honor these guys, you know, starting with, you know, the longevity of a Zach Block and then a Brock Wisney and Danker and guys of sacrifice, Will Humer, and then what a great addition with Ibu Yamazaki and our head manager, Christian Bokelman. He is part of senior night too. He's moving on after this year, and he's put years into the Bears. So it's like, it's a really fun night. So hopefully have a great crowd out there, 6 p.m., Saturday night.
Great group of guys. Great group of seniors. Love it. And let's go grab another big night tonight in the Big Sky. So yep. We'll be paying attention to those scores as well. And we'll be rooting on the Bears coming up on Saturday.
That's what we got to do. So sounds good to me.
All right, my friend. Right. We'll talk to you
soon.
Thanks,
Brady. Yep.
The Two Man Game podcast is brought to you by Renaissance Insurance, Ryan Hicks.
What's up, guys? It's head coach of the Bears, Steve Smiley, and I'm honored to tell KFKA listeners all about my guy Ryan Hicks and Renaissance Insurance. Like basketball, there's plenty of players in the insurance game. So how do you choose the best one for you? For me, I look for character, passion, dedication, and like a star hooper, talent. Renaissance Insurance checks all the boxes and draws up the winning play every time. Let them find the perfect game plan for you. Call Ryan at 970-674-8825 or go to team-rig.com. Go Bears!